The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 28, Text Number 62, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on April 15, 2009, in Kaunas, Lithuania.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 28, Text Number 62. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Aham bhavanna chanyashtvang.
Aham bhavanna chanyashtvang.
Tvam evaham vichakshvabho.
Tvam
evaham vichakshvabho.
Is
that right? The wrong verse is on the board?
Nanao pashyanti kavayash.
Nanao pashyanti kavayash.
Nanao pashyanti kavayash.
Kavayash.
Chidrang jatu managapi.
Chidrang jatu
managapi.
Chidrang jatu managapi.
Chidrang jatu
managapi.
Aham bhavan na chanyashtvam. Aham bhavan na chanyashtvam.
Tvamevaham
Nanao pashyanti kavayash.
Nanao pashyanti kavayash.
Chidrang jatu managapi.
Chidrang jatu managapi.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My dear friend, I the super soul and you the individual soul are not different in quality, for we are both spiritual. In fact, my dear friend, you are qualitatively not different from me in your constitutional position. Just try to understand this subject. Those who are actually advanced scholars, who are in knowledge, do not find any qualitative difference between you and me. Purport. Both the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity are qualitatively one. There is no factual difference between the two. The Mayavadi philosophers are again and again defeated by the illusory energy because they think that there is no separation between the super soul and the individual soul, or that there is no super soul. They are also misled in thinking that everything is the super soul. However, those who are kavayaha, learned scholars, actually know the facts. They do not commit such mistakes. They know that God and the individual soul are one in quality, but that the individual soul falls under the clutches of Maya, whereas the super soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the controller of Maya. Maya is the creation of the Supreme Lord, Maya Srishta. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the controller of Maya. Although one in quality with the Supreme Lord, the individual soul is under the control of Maya. Mayavadi philosophers cannot distinguish between the controller and the controlled.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Bhadakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sai agrajatam sahagana ragunatan vitantam sajivam sadaitam savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamsha.
So, Lord Chaitanya, he has given very, very strict warning. Mayavadi Bhasha Shunile Hoi Sarva Nash. One who hears from the Mayavadi philosophers.
Tas, kuris klausosi iš Mayavadžio filosofijos.
His heart becomes so contaminated that his spiritual life is forever ruined.
Jo širdis taip užsiteršia, kad jo dvasinės gyvenimas yra sunaikinamas amžinam.
This Mayavadi philosophy is so dangerous thing. So we have to properly understand what is Mayavadi philosophy. So we can defeat that Mayavadi philosophy. It is very common philosophy nowadays. Just the other day, someone wrote me, they arguing Mayavadi philosophy, saying there's no difference between the soul and the super soul. They are one and the same. So, how do we properly understand things? The Supreme Person is the energetic source of all existence.
Aukščiausias asmuo yra energetinis asmuo visos kūrinijos.
Aham sarvasya pravavo matok sarvam pravartate. Everything emanates from me, Krishna says.
Krishna sako, viskas išeina iš manęs.
So, in that sense, everything is Krishna.
Ir ta prasme, viskas yra Krishna.
Because Krishna has simply expanded himself as everything.
Nes Krishna paprasčiausiai išskleidė save į viską.
It is sometimes said there is no difference between the energy and the energetic. So there is the expanded Krishna, which is everything. And there is the expander Krishna, who expands from himself everything. So in that sense, everything is Krishna. Because there's nothing that exists except for Krishna's energy. With the exception of Krishna himself, who is the source of the energy. So actually we agree with the Mayavadis to a certain point. Because everything is one with Krishna, yes.
Nes viskas sudaro vienovę su Krishna, taip.
But where we differ is this. They say everything is one and the same. We say everything is one and different.
Bet skirtumas tame, kad jie sako, viskas yra viena ir tas pat, o mes sakom, kad viskas yra viena ir kartu skirtinga.
That's the very big distinction.
Tai yra didžiulis skirtumas.
They say one and the same.
Jie sako, viena ir tas pat.
We say one and different.
O mes sakom, viena ir skirtinga.
From many, many angles of vision, we can see the absurdity of Mayavadi philosophy. They say that everything is one. And that oneness has no form.
Ir ta vienovė neturi jokios formos.
It has no qualities.
Savybių.
It has no personality. It's just it.
Tai nėra asmenybė, tai tiesiog yra tai.
Why do we call them Mayavadis?
Kodėl mes juos vadinam Mayavadis?
They do not call themselves Mayavadis.
Jie savęs nevadina Mayavadis.
We call them Mayavadis because vadi means one who holds to a particular principle. Vadi.
Vadi tai reiškia tas, kuris laikosi kažkokio principo.
We are Krishna vadis.
Mes esam Krishna vadi.
We accept Krishna vad philosophy.
Mes priimam Krishna vad filosofiją.
They are called Mayavadi by us because they say that the form of Krishna is Maya.
O jie vadinami Mayavadi, nes sako, kad Krishnos pavidalas yra Maya.
It's an illusion.
Tai yra iliuzija.
It's an illusory manifestation of the impersonal Brahman.
Kad tai yra iliuzinė apie asmenio Brahmano apraiška.
And everything that exists is an illusory manifestation of the impersonal Brahman.
Ir viskas, kas egzistuoja, tai tik iliuzinis Brahmano pasireiškimas.
But if everything is Brahman,
bet jeigu viskas yra Brahmanas,
then how can illusion exist? That's a duality.
Tai kaip gali apskritai iliuzija egzistuoti, nes tai jau sudaro dualybę.
You understand? They say everything is one.
Aš suprantu, jie sako, viskas viena.
So if everything is one,
jeigu viskas viena,
then how there can be illusion? That's something, that's a duality also.
Tai kaip gali būti iliuzija? Tai jau tampa dualybė.
If everything is one, then nobody could be an illusion, because illusion could not exist.
Jeigu viskas būtų viena, tai iliuzija, nieks negalėtų būti iliuzijoje, nes ji neegzistuotų.
And if everything is one, if you become enlightened, then everybody will be enlightened at the same time, because we're all one.
Ir jeigu viskas būtų viena, tai jeigu kažkas prašviesėtų, tai visi prašviesėtų, nes visi yra
According to this philosophy, you know, we're all the same. We're not different in any way. We're all the same.
Pagal šitą filosofiją mes visi esam tokie patys, tas pats, nesam skirtingi.
So if one person becomes free from illusion, then everyone has to be free from illusion at the same time because we're all the same.
Jeigu vienas žmogus išsilaisvina iš iliuzijos, tai turėtų tada ir visi kiti išsilaisvinti, nes mes vieni ir tas pats.
So this philosophy, Mayavadi philosophy, is very, very, it's full of holes. It's very flawed philosophy.
Ir dėl to šitą Mayavadi filosofiją labai, labai daug trūkumų turi.
So why does it even exist? I mean, why did Shankaracharya present this philosophy?
Klausimas kyla, kodėl Shankaracharya šitą filosofiją įvedė pasaulyje?
I mean, after all, he's Lord Shiva himself. Why did he present such a convoluted, crazy philosophy as Mayavadi philosophy?
Juk jis yra galų gale pats viešpats Shiva, tai kodėl jis tokią neįtikėtiną filosofiją įvedė?
And why did Lord Krishna order him to do this?
Kodėl viešpats Krishna jam nurodė tai padaryti?
That's even more amazing.
Tai dar nuostabesnė dalyka.
The answer is very simple.
Ir atsakymas labai paprastas.
When Krishna left this world 5,000 years ago, the Kali Yuga began to enter. And it got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. It got so bad that just prior to the advent of Lord Buddha, in India, they were killing cows.
Indijoje žmonės žudė karves.
And they were saying, this is Vedic.
Jie sakė, kad tai vediška.
Cow killing is Vedic.
Kad karvių žudimas, tai vedinis ritualas.
They were citing Shastric examples from the Treta Yuga.
Jie citavo net iš Shastrų įrodymus iš Treta Yugos.
When the Brahmins would make a sacrificial fire,
kur Brahmanai užkurdavo ugnį,
and they would take an old cow and put it into that fire while chanting mantras. Actually, that cow was not killed. That cow was rejuvenated with a young calf's body. By the power of Vedic mantra. But the people in that at that time in India, when right just prior to Lord Buddha's appearance, they said, "Oh, the Brahmins were killing cows. It's fine. It's Vedic. We can kill cows and eat. No problem." So Krishna appeared as Lord Buddha and denied the Vedas.
Krishna atėjo kaip viešpas Buda ir paneigė Vedas.
to get them to stop this heinous activity of cow killing. He said the Vedas are false. There is no God. But if you kill these cows, that violence will come back on you by the law of karma. Therefore, if you don't want to get that reaction for that violent activity against the cows, you must stop this cow killing. So Lord Buddha taught ahimsa, non-violence, and completely destroyed Vedic culture. There was no more Vedic culture. After the Emperor Ashoka, the big emperor in India, Ashoka became a Buddhist, and all of India became Buddhist. So now the cow killing is stopped. But there's no acceptance of the Vedas also. The Buddhist philosophy is everything is zero. Nothing exists except for void. And void doesn't even really exist either, because there is no existence. And it's a pretty wild philosophy, Buddhism, you know. Actually, nothing exists at all. There is nothing. Even the concept of nothing doesn't really exist. Non-existence is the reality. So, how to defeat this Buddhistic philosophy and bring people back to Vedic culture? Krishna instructed Lord Shiva to appear as a Brahmana, a learned Brahmin scholar, and introduce this Mayavadi philosophy. Using the Vedic scriptures as the basis for Mayavadi philosophy. So, Shankaracharya took the Vedanta Sutra, and through very expert word jugglery of the Sanskrit, he explained the Vedanta Sutra in an impersonal way, establishing the principle that everything is one, impersonal oneness. Now this is very close to Buddhism, actually. To say everything is zero or everything is one is not that big of a difference philosophically. In either case, variety is false. So, within his short lifespan, Shankaracharya was able to completely defeat Buddhism and drive it out of the borders of India. And re-establish Vedic culture. The Varnashram system. So, now, before he leaves his body, Shankaracharya, he wanted to make it clear now what was the real fact. Before leaving his body, he said, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Mudha Mate. You know, mudha, that means fools and rascals, you see. He addressed his disciples, my dear fools and rascals. Your grammatical knowledge and your word jugglery will not save you at the time of death. Now you should actually become devotees of Krishna. That's what you should really do. But they didn't take his advice. They were too attracted to Mayavadi philosophy. Then, I mean, who wants to give up the idea of being God and become a servant of God? So they ignored his final instruction and remain attached to impersonal Brahman instead of Krishna. So then Krishna sent a series of Vaishnava Acharyas, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka. To gradually introduce a more, to gradually reintroduce the true Vedic understanding. Madhvacharya emphasized two-ness. He said, even after liberation, there is still two, the Lord and the living beings. And each Acharya presented his own different, slightly different angle of vision on the reality. But when Lord Chaitanya came, he presented the full, mature, highest level philosophical understanding. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. The absolute truth is simultaneously, inconceivably one and different. You see, Madhvacharya, Shankaracharya presented the thesis that everything is one. His thesis was oneness. Madhvacharya, he presented the antithesis, two-ness. And Lord Chaitanya presented the synthesis, simultaneous oneness and two-ness. So in this way, he gave us the full understanding of Krishna consciousness. The full, complete understanding of the absolute truth. There are many, many examples to help us understand this principle of simultaneous oneness and two-ness. Consider a drop of water from the Atlantic Ocean. If I bring that drop here in my hand and I say, this is Atlantic Ocean, that's true, it is. It's a specimen of the Atlantic Ocean. But if I tell you this is the Atlantic Ocean, I don't know the subtleties of Lithuanian language, but in English language, if I say this is the Atlantic Ocean, it means it's the entire Atlantic Ocean. So while it is true to say it is Atlantic Ocean, one cannot say it is the Atlantic Ocean. Does that work in Lithuanian also, or is it hard to translate?
Similar,
okay. So, qualitatively, that drop is the Atlantic Ocean because it has the same exact chemical composition. But quantitatively, there is a huge difference between the drop and the entire ocean. You can float a battleship on the ocean itself, but can you float a battleship in that drop of water in your hand? So in this way, we understand qualitative oneness and quantitative difference. Another point is this, the Mayavadis are very fond of giving this example. They say when you become liberated, when you achieve Brahman realization, right now you are a tiny drop of water. But then you, when you become realized, you enter into the ocean and you merge with the ocean, become one with the ocean. You become the ocean when you get liberated. You become God. But consider the fallacy of their analogy. What happens to the water in the ocean? Does it stay in the ocean? What do you say? Does it stay in the ocean? No, it doesn't. You're right. It evaporates and forms clouds and comes back to the land again. And that's a fact, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Aruya Kachchena Parangpadam Pada Patantyato Yushvarangraya Patantyato. They fall down again. Even after undergoing great penances and austerities to merge into impersonal Brahman, patanti yadho, they fall down again to this material existence. So even though the Mayavadi can temporarily merge into the spiritual sky and is a spiritual particle, he cannot remain there. Bhagavatam says because he has no devotion to Krishna's lotus feet, therefore he is not allowed to remain in the spiritual sky. He can come in temporarily as a visitor, that's all, as a spiritual particle floating there. He cannot enter onto any of the planets, the Vaikuntha planets or Goloka Vrindavan. He can't get close to those planets. Simply he can float as a particle in the spiritual sky for some time. And after he's burned off the result of his previous pious activities, patanti yadho, he falls down again to material existence. So the water does not remain in the ocean. But someone remains in the ocean. Who remains in the ocean? Who can say? The fish. That's right. The fish remain in the ocean. So who are the fish? They are the devotees. You see. They live in the ocean. They are submerged in the ocean. But they keep their individual identity and they swim in that ocean of bliss in Krishna's eternal pastimes. So in this way we can understand the position of the Mayavadi and the position of the Vaishnava. They can get only a temporary liberation. Therefore it is stated also in the Bhagavatam, Nirvana Vilambitani. Krishna consciousness is called Nirvana Vilambitani. Nirvana Vilambitani means that which minimizes the value of impersonal liberation. The Buddhists like to call it Nirvana. They're very interested in that Nirvana. But Krishna consciousness minimizes that Nirvana as being very insignificant thing. What's the good if you're in prison? What's the good of getting out on a weekend pass? Well, on Monday morning you have to go back in. You see, the Mayavadis, they get a weekend pass. But they have to go back in on Monday morning to the prison of material existence. The Vaishnavas, they are eternally liberated from that. They are Nitya Siddha. They are eternally liberated from the prison of material existence. So, if you want that liberation, you should clearly understand what is this Mayavadi philosophy and why it is not true. And you should become expert in defeating it also. Because this Mayavadi philosophy is everywhere. Everybody should become very expert in debating the defeating of this opposing argument of Mayavadi philosophy. But how do we pray every day? Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desha Tarine. These two philosophies, the Buddhist philosophy Shunyavadi and the Shankara philosophy Nirvishesha, Prabhupada has come to save us from these two types of Mayavadi philosophies by giving us Krishna consciousness. So we will take full advantage of the mercy of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Then we will achieve that position which is Nirvana Vilambitani. That position of pure Krishna Bhakti, which minimizes the value of this so-called moksha. Actually, the Bhagavatam says, regarding the liberation of the Mayavadi, Vimukti Maninas. Vimukti means liberation, and Maninas means in the mind only. They simply think themselves liberated. They are not actually liberated. I was saved from this Mayavadi philosophy. Previously, I held this Mayavadi viewpoint. Because all the books I was reading were written by Mayavadis. But by coming in contact with the wonderful devotees of Krishna, I realized that this Mayavadi philosophy was a bunch of nonsense. And that the absolute truth is indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's logical after all, since God is the source of everything. He must possess everything that exists within existence. Just like if I extract gold from a gold mine, that gold mine must possess gold. Otherwise, how can gold be extracted from it? So that supreme source of all existence, or God, must possess in itself everything that is there within that which has been extracted from it. So since persons are existing within the creation, isn't it a fact? You're a person, aren't you? Is anybody here not a person? Do we have any impersons here today? No, everyone here is a person. I'm a person, you're a person. Kedarnath Prabhu is a person. You see, we have so many persons here today. So we are all emanations from God. So how could we, the particles of God, who possess personality, exceed God by having personality when God does not have personality? How could the part be greater than the complete whole, you see? If you are a person, you possess personality, and God does not, that means you are greater than God. You have something that He doesn't have. Is it possible that God can be lacking in anything? No. If we have personality, then that means God must have personality. So we can understand from many, many angles of vision that this Mayavadi philosophy is simply garbage. Simply garbage. So we should never be intimidated by Mayavadi philosophy. We should aggressively defeat it, just like Prabhupada did. Prabhupada is very, very aggressive for defeating Mayavadi philosophy. So now I can ask if there's any questions.
In the street, I meet sometimes also many Mayavadis who are distributing books and doing similar things. And should I try to talk with them and defeat them or just leave?
No, keep distributing books to the innocent public. Don't waste your time battling with the Mayavadis. But if they confront you, then you should, and to try to defeat you, then you must defeat them. The main thing is we have to educate those persons who are not yet Mayavadis to prevent them from becoming Mayavadis.
I just walk and they come and try to preach for me Mayavadi philosophy.
What do they say, for example? What is one thing they say?
That there is no God.
No, that's not. Mayavadis say there is God. That's atheism. Mayavadis accept the existence of God. But they say he's formless and impersonal. If they say there is no God, they're not Mayavadis, they're atheists. So they say there is no God. So you ask them, are you saying there is no source for existence? Are you saying that everything that we see here has come out of nothing? You ask them that. Ask them, have you ever seen something come out of nothing before? Tell them, if you say there is no God, you have to prove there is no God. Produce something out of nothing. And then we'll accept there is no God. But until then, you have no proof that there's no God. Any other question?
Yeah.
The Buddhists, they are saying that the perfection is to merge into nothingness. So, but this nothingness, there must be something, because how can you merge into nothingness or become nothing? Something has to be there.
Yeah. So this Buddhist philosophy is crazy.
Yeah.
Nothing exists. That's their philosophy. I don't exist at all, you see. I have no existence. Then how can I be suffering in the cycle of birth and death if I don't even exist? It doesn't make any sense. Any other questions? Yeah.
Uh, Yesterday you have mentioned that we should not enjoy the holy name. Is it not be enjoyers of the holy name? Is it does
not? That's not exactly my point. You should be the enjoyer of the holy name, but don't try to be the enjoyer of the holy name. That's a subtle difference. You have to know the art of how to enjoy the holy name. Instead of trying to get it to serve you, you serve it. That's how to enjoy. It's a subtle distinction there, and you may have missed it.
So the question is, does it apply also to eating nice prasadam and hearing nice kirtam when we enjoy nice...
You're meant to enjoy all of these things. But you, the way to do that is to always be in the mood of serving them. It's like, how is that prayer titled Prasada Sevaya, you see? So that means serving prasad. The way to enjoy, we are meant to enjoy Krishna. But you have to know the art of how to enjoy Krishna. By being the servant of Krishna, not the Lord of Krishna. So yes, we are meant to enjoy the holy name, the prasad, everything we are meant to, the kirtan, we are meant to enjoy all of it. Like Prabhupada orders to enjoy it. He said, chant and be happy. But you have to know the art of how to do that. By being in the mood of serving the holy name, serving the prasad. In this way. Does that make it clear?
She hopes she will sometimes understand.
What is unclear?
If I feel that sometimes I am enjoying and sometimes there is no enjoyment, it means that I am not in that mood.
The proper mood is enjoyment or no enjoyment, go on serving the holy name. Learn how to enjoy even when you're not enjoying by giving enjoyment. That's the key. It's a higher level of enjoyment, see. Some people enjoy being served, you see, that's the material mentality. Mm. Oh, wow, I'm being served, isn't this great? Oh, I'm really enjoying, I'm being served, you see. So don't take your Krishna conscious enjoyment like that. Take your Krishna conscious enjoyment through giving service. And then you can enjoy 24 hours a day without any interruption. You will enjoy on an equal level with God. Why equal? Greater level than God. If you take that mood of always serving. So this is the mood we want to train all of our members of this movement, you see. How to always be in the mood of giving service, giving service, giving service to the devotees, to the holy name, prasad, the deities, to Prabhupada, to Lord Chaitanya. Krishna always giving service, giving service, giving service, 24 hours a day. That's when you really enjoy. Yes.
How this mood of service is applied when we are taking prasadam.
Take what you need to keep your body fit.
To keep your
spirits enlivened. But don't take so much that you get sick. That's called gluttony. Or lust. Prabhupada said, actually, if you eat too much prasadam, it's no longer prasadam, it becomes boga.
Yeah.
So therefore, take what is necessary to keep body and soul together. To keep yourself fully energized for 24 hours a day, bhakti. That is your quota. If you exceed your quota, then it becomes boga. No longer prasadam. Of course, then devotees were in so much anxiety.
Well,
how much should I take? They're asking Prabhupada all these questions. Oh, Swamiji, or not Prabhupada, should I take this much? Can I take that much? Everybody used to be so scared that there used to be a rule we had. Anybody who eats over 7 chickpeas, they're in Maya. They said, well, Prabhupada said 7, you can only have 7 chickpeas. This is completely bogus. Prabhupada never said such a thing, you see. So devotees were in anxiety. Well, how much should I take, Srila Prabhupada? Can I have this much prasadam? Can I have that much prasadam? There is so much in anxiety about it. And Prabhupada said, he says, if you want more prasadam, I am the spiritual master and it's my duty to feed you. So Prabhupada was very kind in this regard. He wanted the devotees to be jolly and happy. But at the same time, he taught us the principle of eating what is required. Of course, for a young man and an old man, it's different. Now, there was a young boy, I think he was like 12 years old. And Prabhupada said, for a young man, he was referring to a 12-year-old boy, you see. He said, for the young man, the overeating mistake is very good. And for an old man, the under-eating mistake is very good. Sometimes, when I'm served prasadam, my servants want me to eat a lot of prasadam. They feel hurt if I don't take a lot of prasadam. I guess they're thinking that I'm an eternal youth. But I have an old man's body, what can I do? Any other questions? Yes, in the back there.
How to find this balance, this quota?
So the proper balance is this: whatever, if it increases your Krishna consciousness, then that is the proper amount of it. If by eating prasadam your Krishna consciousness went down, then you took too much. An elephant can eat like an elephant. But an ant, he can only eat like an ant. He can't eat like an elephant. One man's food is another man's poison. If someone is working very hard physically, you see, he can eat huge amount of prasadam. If somebody just sits all day and answers emails like I do, you know, you can't eat so much
prasadam.
How hard you work, how much you burn up, you know, how much energy you expend physically. But one thing Prabhupada did not like disciples who became big fat. It's mentioned in his books, you see. He did not like fatty disciples. We're meant to be, you know, not big, huge elephants, you know. Big Brahmin bellies, you know. We're not meant to be like that. Yeah.
Two questions. So first question is that you have mentioned that we fall down from the spiritual world, but this is if one person is intelligent, he will never make a bad deal. But coming to this world is a bad deal. So how could we make this bad deal?
This I've already explained. Independence means the ability to fall down. There's no ability to fall down, there's no independence. And you're just a prisoner in the spiritual world. You think Krishna wants to live with a bunch of prisoners? He wants to live with people who are there of their own free will. So for free will to exist, the possibility of misusing the free will must exist. There's no possibility of misusing the free will, then free will doesn't exist. So there has to be a possibility of misusing it. And if there's a possibility of misusing it, there has to also be some probability as well. If there's no probability, there's no possibility. So, probability means there has to be some mathematical probability there's a type of branch of mathematics known as probability statistics. So there has to be a certain percentage of mathematical probability for possibility to exist and for free will to exist. So considering the all-blissful, all-knowing nature of the inhabitants of the spiritual existence, what would be that mathematical probability? It would be infinitesimal. 1/infinity. But if you apply 1/infinity against infinity, what does it come out to mathematically? infinity. So here we see an infinite number of living entities in this material existence. It's pure math. What is the difficulty?
And the second question is,
okay,
explains a little bit why. He says that Krishna gives us a chance to serve him or to suffer. So actually he gives no chance to be happy separately from him. So we are remain like slaves actually, in one sense.
No, if you want to try to enjoy separately, you have Krishna will let you try it. He will even let you think that you're happy. Maya Sukaya. That you want to be the Supreme, you want to enjoy being the Supreme. He will let you get away with it for a while and actually think that you're the Supreme and actually enjoy thinking you're the Supreme. But then in due course of time, it becomes revealed that it was only an illusion. What if I were to pull a big truck up outside here, you see? And in that truck, there were 1 million 100 euro notes. I said, okay, now it's all yours. You can take it home. Go, wow, I'm a multi-millionaire. That's great. Invite all my friends over. Have a big party. This is great. I'm a multi-millionaire. And then you take it down to the bank to deposit it. You take your truck full of euros down to the bank to deposit it. You take it to the drive it over to the bank. You want to deposit the money in the bank. And they look at that note and they say, "My dear sir, I don't know how to tell you this, but that money is counterfeit." You see, for a time you really thought you were a millionaire. In fact, you were so happy with your truck full of your million of one. You had $100 million worth of euros. You were in bliss. You invited all your friends over. You had a huge party. You were really enjoying, weren't you? But was that enjoyment real? No. Because it was counterfeit money. You see. So yeah, you have the sense of enjoyment. So you actually had the sense of enjoyment in this material world. But then it finally becomes obvious, it's just counterfeit. I never really had any reason to celebrate or enjoy anything. I was simply deluded. So Krishna lets you have that false sense of enjoyment because you wanted it. You stubbornly wanted it. But he blesses you with the knowledge in due course of time that it's actually counterfeit. So you can realize, wow, I made a big mistake. Time to go home. Be a devotee of Krishna. Okay, anything else? I think our time has run out. So if you have any questions, come tonight to Vilnius. And I'll answer questions there at that lecture tonight. And I'll be here tomorrow also for Bhagavatam. So I thank you all very much for so kindly attending this class, lending your spiritual energy to make it more auspicious, especially to Hari Katha Prabhu, who is suffering physically, but he came here in spite of that to hear. We all pray for his recovery from his sickness. If Krishna so desires, he can bless Harikatha Prabhu with very nice recovery. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai. Jai.